This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com.
Hi, and welcome to today's podcast, The New York Giants, A Team Without a Home. In part two of this episode, we will take a look at the impact the team's decision to play at the Yale Bowl would have on their performance and hear intimate fan accounts of what it was actually like to watch an NFL game in New Haven, Connecticut. We'll also learn why the Giants' experience at the Yale Bowl would force them to make yet another important decision on where to play their home games. Don't forget to tune into the Sport History Network to discover many other great podcasts. And now, here's your host, Joe Santos.
The realities of playing at the Yale Bowl. With Yankee Stadium in their rearview mirror, the Giants turned their attention to the realities of playing in their temporary home at the Yale Bowl. Although the Giants were familiar with New Haven and the Yale Bowl, this time was different, as the ancient stadium would host regular season NFL games for the first time in its history and presented the team with a host of logistical challenges. This new arrangement meant the team would practice at Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City, New Jersey, and play their quote-unquote home games 80 miles away in New Haven, Connecticut. The team's administrative offices remained in Manhattan. With this scenario, what could possibly go wrong? A New York Times reporter asked defensive linemen Jack Gregory and John Mendenhall on how they felt about their practice facility in New Jersey. Gregory said to Mendenhall, "Don't tell him, he might print it." Roosevelt Stadium was actually a baseball stadium and opened in 1937. It was home to the Jersey City Giants of the International League and the AAA farm team of the baseball New York Giants. In 1960, the stadium hosted a preseason NFL game between the Packers and New York Giants to celebrate the city's 300th anniversary. The game was arranged by the Packers' future Hall of Fame coach, Vince Lombardi, and Ed Franco, who were teammates on the Fordham University's seven blocks of granite offensive line. Although initially constructed as a home field for the Jersey City Giants, the stadium saw its most common use for high school football. And here's a fun fact. From 1972 to 1976, the stadium hosted many concerts by premier acts at the time, including Eric Clapton, the Beach Boys, the Kinks, and Kiss. The first regular season NFL game played at the Giants' new home in New Haven took place on October 7, 1973, against the Green Bay Packers. The team entered the game with a 1-1-1 record, and the paid attendance was 70,050 patrons, which was more than the stadium could actually hold and set a new Yale Bowl record. Tickets were priced at $8, and Giants season ticket holders got first option to purchase seats. Concessions were allowed to sell beer for the first time, but the good news ends there, as the Giants would lose a heartbreaker 16-14 when Green Bay Packer kicker Chester Marcole hit a field goal in the closing seconds to win the game. The fans were none too pleased with the team's performance as a beer bottle thrown in disgust splattered against the side of the team bus as it pulled away from the stadium. Alex Webster, the team's head coach, stated after the game, "It was sort of like a road game. It would only get worse from there as the losses would pile up." This excerpt from the Giants of a Diary of a Giants Fan perfectly describes what it was like playing in New Haven. "The stadium is old, run down, and has less than pleasant facilities. The seats are those usually found in antiquated college stadiums. Seats is perhaps an overstatement. They are nothing more than benches adorned with numbered positions, suitable for those with the derriere of a waif or a youthful co-ed. The football had better be entertaining so as to take one's mind off the inconvenience of getting here, parking a country mile away, and enduring less than comfortable and less than clean surroundings. The walk from the parking lot to the stadium entrance seems just a bit shy of the distance I covered in driving up here from New Jersey. The players dress in a neighboring building that is sufficiently removed to require a bus to deliver them to the stadium. As the bus arrives, it parts the crowd of well-wishers and hecklers alike as it makes its way to the stadium entrance. At the conclusion of the game, the nonstop bus route is again scheduled so the players, who are tired, sweaty, and dirty, can play Russian roulette with the showerheads in the antiquated locker rooms in hopes of catching a spigot that emits hot water. Oh, how we all, players and fans alike, grew to despise the vindictiveness of those responsible for the premature termination of the Yankee Stadium lease. Bob Tucker, one of the few standout players from that season, had this to say about the Yale Bowl. It was a college field, and there was no barrier between the fans and the field. That was okay for college, but for professional, it was not. It got so bad that often uninvited guests would find their way onto the field. Here it is, the second quarter, and I'm standing on the sideline. The defense is out on the field, and there was no security, minimal, maybe one guy on the sideline saying, "You can't come down on the field." And I'd have some teenager standing right next to me, and he wants my chin strap. I said, "You got to wait until after the game here. I'm going to need this for another hour or so." Looking for souvenirs during the game. Amazing. The team's poor performance at the Yale Bowl doesn't elicit fond memories amongst Giant fans and ultimately cost Alex Webster his job as he announced his resignation prior to the team's last game in 1973. And what was that game like? Well, here's one fan's description. "I went to one game at the Yale Bowl, Giants versus Vikings, the last game of the 1973 season. We took a bus to a New Jersey train station, then the train to Penn Station, then on the train out to New Haven. It was a long trip. The rowdy passengers on the train drinking and bragging about whose screwdrivers were better. We get to the stadium and watch an awful Giants team get thoroughly outplayed by the Fran Tarkington-led Vikings. My recollection is that the very cold drizzle lasted the entire game. The stadium was mostly empty in the fourth quarter. We moved from our end zone seats to the 50-yard line to watch the end of the game. We get back to the train, and there's a passed-out drunk lying in the vestibule with a puddle of vomit leading from his mouth. I ended up getting a cold and was sick for a week." Another fan described it this way: December 16th, 1973. New York Giants versus Vikings played in a snowstorm. The men's rooms were in a standalone, unheated building outside the stadium. No urinals, had to go against a wall that drained into a trough. Not bad in the fall, but in the winter, all that urine froze and the men's room became a green ice skating rink. Can't make it up. Even the owner's son got involved in a very awkward situation as John Mara, who's now the current owner, found himself in the middle of an uncomfortable moment during this game. He said, "We're having a terrible year playing at the Yale Bowl, and Alex Webster announced prior to the game that he was going to retire. At halftime of that game, we were getting beat pretty badly, and I can remember him coming up to me in the trainer's room, and he was in tears, saying to me, 'I'm sorry I couldn't bring your family a winner. I did the best I could.' He hugged me at the time, and I remember feeling like I wanted to cry myself. It was as emotional as I'd ever seen him. The second half of the game, it was a completely one-sided affair, and it was very cold," Mara said. "Most of the players seemed to be huddled around the bench around a couple of these portable heaters that we had to keep them warm, and they weren't really paying attention to what was going on. They weren't really into the game at all. So at one point, Alex called me over. I was on the bench in those days. And he said, 'Go over there and disconnect those heaters. I want these guys paying attention. I want to go down with a fight and not huddled around a bench.' So I went over and pulled the plug on these two portable heaters, and the players were looking at me, some of them screaming obscenities at me. For the record, the Giants lost this game 31-7. The Giants would win one game at the Yo Bowl that season, beating the St. Louis Cardinals, who were without five of their starters, including quarterback Jim Hart, and were forced to play their third-string quarterback. Not surprisingly, things did not improve the following year in 1974, when the Giants lost all seven of their home games at the Yo Bowl, including a 26-20 overtime loss to the New York Jets, when a limping Joe Namath fooled everyone by scoring on a bootleg, his first touchdown run in 5 years. The team finished the season with a dreadful 2-12 record. There were no sellouts, which meant all the home games were blacked out locally. The last game of the season on December 8, 1974, turned out to be the last regular season contest ever to be played at the Yo Bowl. The game was played in a torrential downpour, and unlike the first game against Green Bay the year before, which had over 70,000 fans, this one drew just 21,000. As one fan said succinctly, "Yo Bowl was the worst, unless you like picking splinters out of your ass." Linebacker Brian Kelly recalled, "My rookie year was 73, and the first couple of games of the regular season we played at Yankee Stadium. From there, it started going downhill pretty quickly. We went to the Yo Bowl. Not that it's a bad place, but it was more like an away game because we had to drive 2.5 hours from our practice fields to go to a home game." Over the 12-game span the team played in New Haven, Harvard would have been more at home in Yo Bowl, as the Giants truly bombed there with a 1-11 record. They were 1-4 there in 1973 and 0-7 in 1974, and they were outscored by 104-58 and 145-92, respectively. In other words, if you went to see the Giants at the Yo Bowl in 73 or 74, chances are they would have been beaten by something like a 21-13 score. As a direct result of their horrendous play, the Giants' season ticket sales suffered disastrously. At one time, such sales amounted to 58,000, one of the most in sports anywhere at that time. But when the team moved to New Haven, the sales dropped to 41,000. To make matters worse, their oasis in the desert, Giants Stadium, was now not going to be ready until the 1976 season. Something had to be done. No mas! On December 18, 1974, just 10 days after the last game of that year, the team announced they had come to an agreement to play their 1975 home games at Shea Stadium, with an option to play their 76 games at Yankee Stadium. One sports reporter wrote, "The fastest the New York Giants moved all year was out of town." The move seems to have caught Yale Bowl officials by surprise, as they claimed the team never made mention of the fact that they were negotiating simultaneously with the city of New York, as the university fully expected another NFL season at the Yo Bowl. There were also reports that Yale lost $400,000 because of the team's relocation to Shea Stadium, and that the city also stood to lose a large sum of money because it controlled the concessions and the parking. The Giants were helped by the fact that New York City now had a new mayor, Abe Beame, who didn't harbor the same animosity that former Mayor Lindsay did and allowed the Giants to play at Shea, which would now host the Mets, Yankees, and Jets. With Shea Stadium now home to all New York outdoor teams, the Giants would once again become second-class citizens and be forced to play some of their home games on Saturdays instead of the traditional Sunday afternoon time slot. Despite this, owner Wellington Mara said the unhappy attitude of many players towards the Yo Bowl and the invitation by New York City officials outweighed the scheduled complications at Shea Stadium. He said, "Our players have never accepted the Yo Bowl as home field, where the Giants were only won one of 12 regular season games in 2 years." He added, "I've had many fans say, I'm not giving up, but I just can't make the trip." The move in 1975 to Shea Stadium, which is near Long Island, was a positive factor in helping the team improve its record to 5-9, as the five wins were more than they had won in the prior 2 years combined. And with the new stadium, New Jersey, now officially scheduled to open in 1976, things were finally starting to look up for the Giants. That didn't stop famed sports reporter Red Smith from taking a shot when he referred to the team as the New York, New Haven, Long Island, New Jersey Giants. The Giants finally moved to their new home in New Jersey in 1976. The team dropped the iconic NY logo from their helmet and replaced it with the team's name, Giants. After opening the season with four straight road games, they played their first home game at Giant Stadium on October 10, 1976 against the Dallas Cowboys. And while they lost this game 24-14 and would go on to lose several more that year to finish 3-11, they now had, at long last, a place to call home, and they've remained in New Jersey ever since.
Thanks for listening to the New York Giants, a Team Without a Home podcast. Don't forget to tune into the Sports History Network and discover more great podcasts at sportshistorynetwork.com. Take care.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.